You're listening to A Stranger Podcast, www.thestranger.com.
Hi, this is Jen Graves, and you're listening to Invisible, The Stranger's Weekly Conversation with People in Art. I'm here with Matthew Offenbacher. Hi.
Hi, Jen.
He's a painter, and more recently, he started to be the publisher of an artist newsletter called La Especial Norte, which the first installment came out just like a week and a half ago, or 2 weeks ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the first installment has an essay by Matthew about shit in Seattle art. It also has a reprint of Robert Smithson essay, Cultural Confinement. It has sort of a narrative by Gretchen Bennett, A Philosophy of Street Art. An interview with Chris Bruce, the Seattle curator from a little while ago, who's still in the area, but who has a sort of historic perspective, done by Joseph Park, and other things that are also worth reading, but most especially sort of half architectural, half porn testimony by Eli Hansen. So I wanted to know, first of all, where did this come from? When, how long has this been in the works?
So I guess I started thinking about it 6 months ago or so. And it came out of so there's a group of artists in town that get together and meet once a month. We sort of rotate through each other's studios, and it was something that Jenny Heichman, the sculptor, and I started a little over a year ago. And
who's in the group?
You know, it has like kind of a sort of changing, it's sort of like friends and friends of friends, and it's kind of a long list, and it's always kind of shifting, so I'm not going to list them all, but it's like, Jenny and I, and, you know, like Joe, and, you know, the people who are in this this publication, and some other folks, the idea behind it was just to, you know, I think often what happens is, you know, there's sort of clusters of artists working in different places in town. There's like different, you know, studio buildings, and those people who are in, have the studios near each other, end up talking a lot, interacting, checking in with their work, and, you know, sharing ideas. But because they're so spread out, and Seattle is kind of spread out, there's not a lot of sort of intermixing of those groups, so part of the idea was like to sort of have a more formal kind of setup where, you know, we know that once a month we're all going to go to someone's studio and we're going to talk about their work, and then we're going to talk, you know, sort of check in with each other. And for me, it really, the idea was, you know, and for Jenny and I, the idea was to try to build community in Seattle and bring artists together and, you know, start a discussion. So the La Especial Norte came out of that group.
And this is, you had done a little bit of research into artist publications and found, in Seattle, and found Redhead Stepchild from not too many years ago, something from the kind of Toby Graves era, sounded like, and then Toby Room from Tacoma, which was published by Jared Pappas Kelly and Michael Lent, and those guys stopped doing that. So this is, you know, this is coming back from a void. There's been nothing for a little while.
Well, there are a few things that I forgot to mention when talking about earlier, but there is, you know, there's Rivet in town, which is not exclusively visual art,
right,
although they have a really strong, I think, sort of visual art influence in their stuff, and I really like that publication.
Is it more writing by artists, or is it more artists do projects in the magazine?
I think I've seen both.
Have you seen both?
Yeah, I mean, they
probably missed
they don't really do criticism so much, but they do have sort of, you know, they do have artist writing stuff.
Okay.
And they also, they have projects.
Were you seeing this as a piece of criticism, the essay that you wrote?
No, I don't really think of it that way. It's sort of, because it really isn't, like, at least it doesn't.
Yeah, well, are you in a weird position if you were to try to do that? You know, because you're an artist and you would have to be criticizing your peers. What do you see it as?
I sort of see it as just sort of a piece of ideas, like trying to sort of look around and sort of think about what's happening in Seattle from my perspective and sort of try to sort of integrate ideas and talk about work that I'm excited about. Mm-hmm. I mean, if anything, it's more like boosterism. Like, I just kind of like, I'm really super excited about some of this work and, mm-hmm. And the way that these ideas relate to each other and the way they relate to the region. And so it's just like, you know, wanting to point it out more than anything. I mean, I think really good critics, like what you and like Regina do, are like actually...
You don't have to say that about either one of us.
No, but you guys are good. And what you do is you make like value judgments. And I think that's a really important part of a job of a critic is, you know, just to say, you know, what you think is good and what isn't and why. But the stuff that's going into this zine is sort of more... It's not so much like that kind of critical judgment making. The mm-hmm. idea is more sharing ideas.
Mm-hmm. Did you start with Mud Thing?
As for this
particular
actually
essay?
No. This essay, it was funny. This essay came together because I don't know. Did you say that? So it's an essay about shit. And sort of excremental imagery in Seattle art. That's a good summary anyway. and it sort of talks about a number of different artists and pieces that kind of have that as a subject. It was funny. It came out of like a whole like constellation of things that I, you know, like 6 months ago I started noticing. There was like personally, I have like a nephew who is being toilet trained, mm-hmm. who lives out in Bellevue. So that was kind of on my mind. And then there was Alex Schwader's work, mm-hmm. who, you know, if you're an artist in Seattle, like you have to be aware of. And I've been struggling with the work for, you know, since I moved here. I moved here about 2.5 years ago, and I've been trying to figure out what he's up to, and, you know, because it's extremely different work than what I do. Mm-hmm. And so came out of sort of trying to think about his thing. And it also came out of reading that profile of Susan Robb, which now I can't remember if it showed up in your newspaper or if it was your competitor. But
I'm
anyway.
I'm sure it was my competitor.
Oh, okay. Sorry to bring it up.
Right.
But anyway, it was that cover, that beautiful cover picture. And there was an article about her talking about her ideas for the show that's up now, including this idea for using a bio digester, human waste, energy producing element that really kind of caught my fancy. And then I started thinking, and then once I started thinking about that, oh, right, and then there was the underground tour, which was mm-hmm. the other part, which I just went on pretty recently when some relatives were in town, and was really struck by how obsessed the narrative part of that tour was with excrement in Seattle history. So anyway, it's like a bunch of things, like, all come together, and I was like, oh, my God, like, what's the deal with this?
Yeah.
And so I had to just, you know, so I had to think about it in sort of the way I think about things or write about it, so...
Does shit play a role in your work?
It really doesn't. I mean, it's not anything I've thought much about. I mean, it's sort of what I realized in sort of working on this piece is like the classical use of excrement, classical being like modernist, classical use of excrement in contemporary art is as a symbol of sort of this romantic notion of the artists expressing themselves. Mm-hmm. It's like their innermost self, mm-hmm. literally, you know, being expressed. Mm-hmm. And there's a tradition of that in modernist art history. So insofar as my work kind of talks about romanticism and romantic notions about art history, I think it does relate to that, but it's never been anything. I'm actually kind of prudish. I mean, it's funny that I've gone all like public with this shit thing because I'm not one who like sits around like talking about stuff like that usually. Actually, my partner Jennifer, like, it cracks her up that this is like, you know, like suddenly, like I'm on, you know, I'm being on a podcast being asked to talk about human waste because it's really not my forte. And it certainly is not something that like I think about in my art or had thought about much before doing this. But it's just like I noticed it, you know, it was like really something happening, like it showed up in a lot of places. And so I wanted to try to get it, you know, it was really me trying to figure out what the deal was.
Well, and you brought in Eric Elliott, which is interesting, painter who works with really thick paint. And I had never thought of his work in that context before, but, you know, one thing that this brings out, this question you're talking about in modernist history about kind of the inner, some inner sense of something real and sort of raw brought out from the artist that is kind of
primitive and undigested, or semi-dig, you know, something like that, but not presentable in that sense, right? Not against sort of classicism. It ties into the question of how to be authentic, how to make an authentic painting after photography, how to make an authentic landscape painting after, you know, the swell and rise of urbanism, how to make a portrait of an animal when you have no direct relationship with animals anymore. And animals appear a lot in your work. So I wanted to ask you what you work from and how, and I know that I was just looking on your website today and noticed that in the past, you've actually made paintings as though they were made by animals. So you're making a painting of a beaver, and then you're making work as though it's been made by a beaver.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of trying on this, like, dual role, this dual subjectivity. So what, I mean, and making images that involve animals is also, you know, easily a really big kind of thread in Northwestern work. But you were doing it in Southern California, obviously. So where does this come from for you? Why are you making pictures of animals?
Well, it's funny. I started doing it in Southern California, but it was really about the Northwest.
Oh, really? Because
I grew up outside of Portland. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, and I was painting beavers. And
loyally, you're wearing a T-shirt that says Oregon on it right now.
Yes, I wish the listeners out there in podcast land could see it. It's one of my favorite T-shirts.
It's brown.
It says Oregon. So it was kind of thinking about this kind. I think it is kind of a special relationship that people in the Northwest have with the natural environment, being, you know, both with the animals and the sort of plants and mountains, I guess, and water and all that stuff. And for me, it was, they're just like kind of a means to an end. Like they're a way for me to try to talk about some of the things about art history and to ask questions about what art is good for.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of stand-ins. Like they're kind of like, sort of an easier way into asking some of those like hard or philosophical or kind of, some people would say, overly intellectualized, I might say that some days, questions about art so a way in to those questions, like we were just talking about, like in terms of like romanticism and sort of people's, you know, trying to draw analogies between people's relationship with, say, a painting and people's relationship, say, with a river otter.
Mm, mm-hmm. River otter.
Or
not
beaver,
a river, you said.
A river otter.
Yeah. Is the river otters, is that the one that's very vertical, the painting that you made that's extraordinarily vertical, showed at Howard House last year, I think, or earlier this year?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very vertical. And there are two river otters at the top, as though you're looking at them from the bottom of a very clear ocean, and there's sun outside. Mm-hmm. Are they river otters?
Those, I think, were sea otters.
Sea otters.
I don't know why
really
I just said river otter.
Well.
Yeah, I think river otters are a little sleeker, and sea otters are kind of have more. Anyway,
got it.
Yeah,
but they are also, you know, one of the things that amazed me about that painting is that they are also formed into the. I think I might have even noted it in a review, but they're formed into the dreaded yin yang pose. They're like sort of, you know, they are both these kind of the painting feels very personal, and these paintings feel very personal, and at the same time you're really playing with these kind of incredibly cheap images that tourists would pick up upon visiting an area like this, or that might be sort of ironed onto a shirt. And so, you know, you're putting that in, that reference in, presumably, to get some distance from the romantic kind of idea, but, or not, what are you working with? I mean, what...
Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny,
Do you have source material, or are you just sort of...
Yeah, like those otters actually came from, were based on photographs I took of the aquarium, so that dramatic kind of top lid, it's actually there in a tank. In the Seattle Aquarium, there's a big glass window that you can stand in front of that you see underwater scene, you know, So that's actually kind of important for me for the meaning of it. Like, they're actually sea otters in captivity. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this lately, and I think it's something about vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And I think actually it was Gretchen Bennett's show that she just had at Howard House, the one that just closed, that really got me thinking about it. Those are those wonderful drawings of Kurt Cobain based on YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm. Made in color pencil.
And she did this amazing thing with the framing of them, where they didn't have glass covering them, even though there are these really kind of fragile media that traditionally you'd, you know, have it behind glass. And so they had this extremely, like, kind of, like, when you were there seeing them in person, this, like, vulnerability, like, yeah, in the actual materials. And also in the subject matter, because, you know, obviously Kurt Cobain and sort of his story and the way that we all relate to that story is one of, like, you know, sort of, you know, identifying with his vulnerability and his sort of, like, awesome power, too, and all that kind of together. And
the overdeterminedness of that. No.
Yeah.
Like, just being aware that it's a cliche,
right,
to identify with him in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. Like, right. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of, there's like embarrassment in there too, because you, like, you fall for it, or, like, mm-hmm, you know, you're like that, and, you know, it's like a, just like a human kind of emotion. And I guess for me, that the sort of the cliche or kind of more kitschy, like, imagery of the animals, it sort of operates in a similar way, or at least I'm trying to make it operate that way. And what I've begun doing, actually, is painting. So my next series of paintings is going to be of my cat, because I realized that in order to sort of emphasize, like, that, sort of the person, like, to play up the personal and the sort of vulnerable and sentimental parts of it, like, actually painting an animal that I live with and am really emotionally attached to, mm-hmm, will really push that even farther than, mm-hmm, the kind of wildlife paintings. So we'll see how that works out.
Have you always worked in painting?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How long?
How long have I been painting?
Yeah.
Really seriously, like, I don't know, like 10 years maybe, or a little longer than that.
Mm. How important is it, the idea of kind of illusionism in your paintings? Because they're really surfacey paintings. Like, the surfaces of the animals themselves are kind of mosaics, or not mosaics, but they can be macrame patterns, or they'll be, you know, based on something often that is taking me at least back to sort of the 60s or the 70s, that kind of stuff. So, you know, there's this way in which some of them are incredibly illusionistic, and then others are less so. And I'm curious about, like, are you, when you're painting, are you concerned with technique, right? Like, are you still studying technique, like trying to make animals look more and more like animals? And in your career, do they look more and more like animals, or was there a point where you said, that's as much like an animal as I wanted to look, or like a photograph of an animal as I wanted to look, and then you drew back? Or how did that progress?
Wow, that's a really interesting question. I'm not sure
how to answer it. That usually means it's not a good question.
No, it actually is good. I don't know if I have a ready answer for it. I mean, I don't think that much about technique beyond trying to make it look right. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very, it's a kind of an intuitive, that part of my process is really intuitive. I don't know. I'll have to get back to you on that one, I guess.
Okay. All right. But you're working from photographs, generally?
Or? From a combination of photographs and drawings, actually. Mm-hmm. Other people's drawings of animals, and also some from life, drawings from life.
Okay. Yeah. What are some, what's some stuff you've seen lately that you're really excited about?
So I'm really, Susan Robb's show, that's at Scott Lowermore's face, I think is really excellent and totally worth going and checking out. I'm pretty excited about
what
that.
About it? I
especially like the piece that has like fake crystal plexiglass rocks, mm-hmm, and then it has like, it's in the first room, it's a large, it's hard to miss element, and then it has a big iron rod that's mm-hmm. sort of a replica of one of the spikes that's in, what's his name?
Demaria's
lightning field mm-hmm. piece. That, and then it has like a white flag that's made up of animal feathers and mm-hmm. sort of pelts that's attached to it as if it was like a surrender flag. I think that piece is really striking. And also, I mean, I guess I relate to like the kind of, like it's sort of kitschy, like it mm-hmm. kind of, you know, has this collaging of mm-hmm. sort of kitsch elements, but it's like pretty monumental in scale and mm-hmm. visually quite beautiful. So I'm excited about that. See, all the stuff that's up in town, that was great. Like Oscar and Eli's show at Howard House. I haven't seen their thing at Sam yet, but mm-hmm. the Howard House show, I think, is really top-notch.
What are you interested in? Like, especially as it relates to your work.
I think that they're doing... I just really admire how sort of that casual, that kind of like, you know, let's put on a show kind of feeling they've got going, I think is like fabulous. And on top of that, it's like so formally sort of put together. I think it's really tight. And so that combination is really appealing to me, something mm-hmm. that I'm really interested in trying to get more in my own work.
Why did you move here?
Because my partner, Jennifer, got a job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think of it? I mean, what do you think of the art world especially? I imagine it's more, I know it's more active than San Diego, but obviously that at that distance also you're pretty close to LA.
Yeah, it's true. I did go to LA quite a bit mm-hmm. and I miss being that close yeah. to it because LA is pretty awesome for seeing art. Mm-hmm. But Seattle's been great. I mean, I really, it's, you know, there's such an awesome community of artists here. Like that's been really huge for me. I think that's, to go back to the La Special Norte and this discussion group that we have going. Like it's a really like smart, interesting group of people who mm-hmm. are like really trying to make really good artwork. And that's just, you know, for an artist, like that's just really exciting mm-hmm. to be around folks like that. So it's been a great move for me.
Were you the one who wanted to reprint the Robert Smithson piece?
Yeah.
What was the thinking behind that? How does that apply to Seattle or to the Northwest or to art, the art scene today? It's an essay. Well, you can talk about what it's about and why you chose it.
So it's a it's an essay Robert Smithson wrote in I'm gonna look because I don't know 1972, and it's called Cultural Confinement, and it's a super pissed off essay. Like he's got a real bee in his bonnet about the art world. And I mean, I don't know, for anyone who's listening who knows about Robert Smithson, it's like at its most sort of fierce and like, you know, angry, like that mm-hmm. tone. And he's talking about, for him, cultural confinement means the ways in which artists and their work are confined by the institutions mm-hmm. that support them, such as museums and art galleries and curators and critics. I must say,
museums, like asylums and jails, have wards and cells.
Yes, right, exactly. And we're all locked up inside of them. It's a very grim view of sort of what artists do.
And critics are a part of it, right? That's, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I guess, so there was a couple reasons why I wanted it in there. One was that I think Smithson is like sort of the exemplar of an artist who also wrote and whose writings actually, who an excellent artist and an excellent writer, and whose writings really helped shape the discourse about his work and the work of his contemporaries. And that's kind of what I had in mind for this La Special Norte. So it's kind of an example piece. Like I want people to be like, oh, this is possible. Like, you know, artists can be smart and they can make really great artwork and they can also talk about the issues surrounding artwork and other people's work and be a real active participant in sort of how the work is received. Mm-hmm. I think that's often, and you should stop me because it's getting boring. Jen told me before we started that I should, if I'm talking too long and it's getting boring, that I should interrupt myself. So this is
your
chance.
If you're getting bored with your own talking, then you know it's time to stop talking.
It's like so hard to tell.
I know.
Oh my God.
I'm not bored. But okay. Why did you put it in? Besides that he's an example.
So he's a great example of that. And also, I think his message is, I mean, it's good. It's extreme, obviously. Like, and it's, you know, the anger is like maybe a little much. Like, it almost gets kitschy by the end of it. The angry artist. But in some ways, I think he's right. Like, he opens up a really interesting space to think about the difference between art and life and art that's produced for certain kinds of spaces, like such as galleries and museums, and art that engages the world larger. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of resonance with what a lot of artists in this region are thinking about in terms of, you know, like Susan's a great example. We were just talking about her, and she has her gallery show, and she's also, she was telling me, going and touring her tube piece, you know, mm-hmm. those big black tubes of garbage can material that wave around in parks around the country, I guess, or I don't know exactly what she's doing.
Several different places.
But like that's, like, I think that's like an awesome, like, sort of thing that's in the direct lineage of that Robert Smithson mm-hmm. is talking about, like art that, you know, it's like gets out of the whole system, you know, that's able to buck it all and work independently of it. And mm-hmm. I really admire that.
Are you working on anything like that?
No, I'm not. It's funny, like, my work, I don't think is that much about shit, and, like, I'm not really, like, an artist who bucks the system that much, and I guess maybe this is, like, my fantasy life, like, Los Angeles Norte is, like, the artist I wish I was, or, I don't know, it's kind of strange how that works.
That's great.
But, yeah.
What's going to be the next one?
So, I don't know yet. So all of you artists listening out there, you should get in touch with me if you want to write for it, because the next issue is probably going to come out in September. So we have this summer to put together. And there's a number of people who have expressed interest to write stuff yet, but I'm not sure what they're going to write. I think I want to reprint something again, maybe something by Mira Shore, who was a feminist painter, who was one of the inspirations, I should say, for this thing also. She started with another woman a journal in New York called Meanings in the mid-80s that was kind of had a similar idea. Like, it was like it's like a sort of unattached to any institution or academics, or it was like but it was supposed mm-hmm. to be a thoughtful art mm-hmm. kind of journal with a real feminist kind of impulse, you know, sort of multiple voices and politically sort of progressive and thoughtful. And anyway, so I think she's awesome and she's a real inspiration for me. And so I wanted, and she was also a great writer and published a lot in that magazine and other places. So maybe something by her. I'm going to work on an essay too. Cool. So.
Well, thank you so much for taking time to do this. I really appreciate it.
And, sure.
We'll just keep an eye out for September.
All right. Excellent. Thanks for having me in.
You've been listening to Invisible. This is Jen Graves.